Welcome to Guerrilla Radio. Well, last month, a curious arrest came and went in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. The incident surrounded the catch and release of a band of American mercenaries, allegedly nabbed in flagrante, not in the boudoir, but the National Bank. In what sounds like a Matt Sennett two-reeler, this keystone operation would be slapstick, but for the deadly serious political situation in Haiti now, and its long history of foreign engineered disaster. Kim Ives is a contributing editor at Haiti Liberté, a weekly newspaper published in French, Creole, and English, and veteran reporter, editor, and photographer for Haiti Progress. He's a past host of the WBAI radio Haitian news program Land Be Call, and documentary filmmaker whose projects include Bitter Cane, Haïtien Leve Canpe, and The Coup Continues, among other credits. Kim, too, is a founding member of the International Support Haiti Network and has led numerous delegations to Haiti since 1986 to investigate human rights violations, union struggles, peasant land conflicts, and state enterprise privatization campaigns. His recent article, American Mercenaries Arrested in Haiti, were part of a half-baked scheme to move $80 million on behalf of embattled president, published with The Intercept, broke the story of the hapless gang who couldn't loot straight. Kim Ives in the first half. And can any war be called just? It's a concept not questioned enough, with most people assuming wars of self-defense are clearly defensible. David Swanson is an author, activist, tireless promoter of pro-peace networks and websites, and co-founder of World Beyond War, an organization making the case for the abolition at last of that ultimate expression of human destructiveness. David Swanson refuting the just war doctrine in the second half. And Victoria-based activist and longtime Guerrilla Radio contributor Janine Bancroft will be here at the bottom of the hour with the Left Coast Events Bulletin, bringing us up to speed with some of what's good going on in and around our town in the coming week. But first, Kim Ives and a half-baked Haitian heist hitting the fan. Stick around. Well, welcome back to the program, Kim.
Thank you very much, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you, of course. Now, Kim, it's tempting to regard, as I was in the intro there, this clownish operation as low comedy, but what does it tell us about the state of things in Haiti right now?
Well, it's a very turbulent, critical, chaotic situation, and I think to some extent the timing of their visit may be because of that. Essentially, this government which has come in is the second PHTK government. PHTK stands for Haitian Bald-Headed Party. They've held power basically since 2011 when they were shoehorned into power through the assistance of then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. The first president was a guy called Michel Martelly, and the second was the current president, Jovenel Moïse. And the hallmark of both of their administrations has been corruption, terrible corruption. Now, the Venezuelans, back in 2008, made an arrangement with Haiti to set up an agreement called the Petrocaribe Agreement, where they would give Haiti cheap gas and cheap credit to essentially support social projects, building roads, building hospitals, etc. The arrangement was they would pay Venezuela 60% up front, and then 40% would go into a fund, a savings account, if you will, called the Petrocaribe Fund, repayable after 25 years at 1% interest. So this money, instead of going to do all these social works for the people, was embezzled or misspent or flat-out stolen by primarily the Martelly government. And now the Jovenel Moïse government has been blocking investigation of it. They tried to sort of dismiss it at first. But the popular uprising against the government's corruption and really saying, where did this money go, this $4.3 billion of oil revenues that the Venezuelans, in case of exemplary solidarity, gave the Haitian people? Well, it started with those where did the money go demonstrations, but it's really morphed into Jovenel must go, since the past year or so, primarily because the Petrocaribe Fund has finished because of the sanctions that Donald Trump put on Venezuela. Haiti can't even pay the Venezuelans. And so now we're back to very expensive gas and a new creditor who is the International Monetary Fund. And they said to Haiti, listen, you got to raise your gas prices if we're going to give you any more loans. They tried to do that in July, and the lid came off in Haiti. The people went into the street. The country was shut down for 3 days, 6th, 7th, and 8th of July. And basically, it's been demonstrations ever since, August, September, October, November, huge demonstrations. Now, up until January, Haiti had not lined up with Washington in its campaign against Venezuela, trying to get out Maduro. But on January 10th, there was another OAS vote. Haiti did vote with Washington. And really, that, to me, was why when the people came out on February 7th, the anniversary of Jean-Claude's departure 33 years ago, they basically shut down the country for 10 days. Everybody thought Jovenel would have to leave. And it was on the final day of this that here these mercenaries arrived. These, it turns out there were eight total. Most of them came on a jet, a private jet out of Baltimore, arrived at 5 a.m. at the airport on February 16th. And they brought, you know, semi-automatic weapons, rifles and pistols and bulletproof vests and satellite phones, drones, sniper telescopes, and they went right through the airport. They never went, got their passports stamped by immigration. They didn't go through customs. The next day, they were out at the central bank. And it turns out, as we showed in a report that appeared in Haiti Liberté and The Intercept, who we did a joint partnership with to research this, that they were going to the bank to basically take the $80 million, which is sitting at the Banque de la République d'Haïti, the central bank, which belongs to Venezuela. This is the money that Haiti couldn't pay Venezuela for the Petrocaribe gas, for the 60% they're supposed to pay because of the Trump sanctions. They couldn't pay it. So that $80 million is sitting in an escrow account at the BRH, and they wanted to move this to an account that Jovenel could control, because right now, to get at that money, they have to have the BRH president, the prime minister, Jovenel, and also the Venezuelans have to sign off. Right. That's a big question, which Venezuelan? So now they tried to get this $80 million out of there. The police happened to notice their cars on the street, and maybe they were alerted by the security at the bank, too, and their cars had no license plates on them. And so they stopped them, and there's a two-hour standoff, and they end up being arrested. U.S. comes in, says, let these guys go. They put the pressure on Jovenel Moïse, put the pressure on all his officials, and these guys basically walk. 3 days later, on Wednesday, they're flown back to the U.S. from Haiti, and they're never charged with anything, not from exporting weapons to Haiti without a permit, which you're supposed to do, not for coming in to Haiti with the guns, not for going through immigration without checking in, nothing. They walk away scot-free. So anyway, we're working on this case. There's more to it. There was even a second contract, which I won't go into here, which was much worse than even this grand theft that they were trying to do. It's a very sordid tale.
Well, they didn't even get a moving violation. You know, I think it's hilarious. I have in my mind this image that you often see in Hollywood movies of the samurai team or whatever it is, you know, arming up at the very beginning. You see all their weapons, you know, and they're getting ready and the music is thumping and these guys are doing that. But, you know, it's like, who got the license plate? Did you bring the license plates? and instead of this climate.
Well, the license plates were in the car. They'd taken them off. It clearly wasn't an error. They removed them, and they found them in one of the cars. So God knows what they were up to, but, you know, they were trying to say, oh, you know, we're working for the president and this and that. But
we don't need those stinking license plates. Well, with this tale, I find it just I keep going back to comedy, and I'm sure that there is a Hollywood movie in this coming down the pike. I mean, somebody's going to get rich after all, maybe. But the security guard at the bank, you've got these guys that are armed, as you described. They're ready for World War III. And this one security guard standing at the bank in the wee hours of the morning says, no, I'm not going to let you in. And the whole thing falls to pieces on the strength of one recalcitrant security guard, probably half asleep.
Right. Well, it was at 2 in the afternoon. It was 2 in the afternoon. And I think, you know, the guard was being prudent. He didn't know what they were up to. And, you know, we don't know all the details of how it went down there. There appears to be a possibility that what they were maybe doing at that time was just a reconnaissance sort of mission before the big play, which may have been the next day. I mean, there's a lot of details which we haven't nailed down. We did have a source who gave us the broad outlines of what they were up to and what they were trying to do. So we're trying to get all those details now, but we thought it was important to get out the basic story that they were trying to get at this money as soon as possible.
Well, you know, given the situation in Haiti with the people in the streets, and the last time you and I spoke, it was back in the late summer, July or August, if I remember rightly, talking just about this when the cooking oil prices and fuel prices were all being just boosted and people came out in the streets, and there was a quasi-martial law being brought down by the Moise government. The situation there now, when you mentioned that these cross signatures were necessary to move this money out of the Petrocaribe account. One of those signatures was John Henry Seyant, the prime minister, the recently departed prime minister, who seems to be having his own battle. There's internal fights going on, or at least there was, with the president. What's the situation between the elites right now in Haiti, both with Seyant and now that Seyant is gone?
Well, Seyant's out. They have a new guy in Le Pen who is some kind of a puppet, particularly a sort of the biggest drug dealing senator, it appears. Seyant was not somebody who was very beloved, shall we say, by the Haitian masses. So this was sort of an inter-ruling group struggle for power. Seyant would have become president if Jovenel had stepped down, so that was sort of his principal motivation. I don't think he was particularly principled or anything like that. But there was a sector of the opposition that was working with him. Tomorrow, on the 29th, there's supposed to be another big demonstration. Haitians usually choose anniversaries, and March 29th is the anniversary of the 1987 Constitution. So a lot of people would be out marching for that, even though there's some dissension within the opposition right now about that march. But I think the masses will turn out in pretty big numbers. So this mobilization is not going away because the situation is impossible, really, for people to survive with the gas prices going up, with inflation just run away, with there no employment. So this means the struggles within those ruling groups between the president and I don't know what prime minister he's going to come up with now. The guy who's in there, Le Pen, is just temporary. So I think probably they'll try to get somebody with a slight oppositional color, a little bit like Seyant had, but at the end of the day, the people aren't going to be satisfied with anything but Jovenel Moïse stepping down.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Kim Ives. Kim is a contributing editor at Haiti Liberté, a weekly newspaper published in French, Creole, and English. He's also a veteran reporter, editor, and photographer for Haiti Progress. His recent article, American Mercenaries Arrested in Haiti Were Part of a Half-Baked Scheme to Move $80 Million on Behalf of Embattled President, is published in cooperation with The Intercept. That's a pretty big landing there of it, all of its own. How did that... affiliation come about, Kim?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story because I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago, which got picked up by a lot of the international press, about the correlation between the Haitian Revolution, which was underway, and the Venezuelan situation, and how so much of what's happening in Haiti, as I described just moments ago, has to do with this Petrocaribe fund and its pilfering, and now it's disappearing. I did a podcast with Jeremy Scahill, who's one of The Intercept's founders, along with Glenn Greenwald, and we were talking about it, and I said, man, Jeremy, we got this situation with these mercenaries. We should get Haiti Liberté together with The Intercept. The next day, he called me back, and he goes, man, Kim, you won't believe this. We got this incredible information, this source, and, you know, let's get together and work on this. I ended up going down to Haiti for a week talking to, police officials and the investigating judge and et cetera. And so basically that's how it all came together. We pooled our various areas of expertise, as you know, or as your listeners may know, The Intercept, and Jeremy in particular, is sort of a mercenary Blackwater specialist. And so we pooled our specialties together to put the piece together.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting, too, because when I first heard the first reports I heard about this whole affair, I'll put it that way, a lot of it was coming from information provided by the now lamented past Prime Minister Jean-Henri Saint, and he came out saying that there were snipers involved and that they had come to fire on the protests that were ongoing at the time, this being very reminiscent of what happened in Thailand and in Ukraine and in other places as well. And I thought, oh no, there must be some sort of internecine struggle going on here, and they're bringing in the snipers to do what they did in the Maidan or something else of that of that nature. Was this a worry at any point for you as well?
Oh well, absolutely. I mean, this was, and I could say this is still the predominant Haitian perception of this team, was that they were there to shoot demonstrators. Mm-hmm. And as I say, there was a second contract, and it involved, shall we say, mortal crime. I'm not going to go into it much more than that, but we're working on that. But for a lot of people, they were even a little dismayed with our reporting, because we said, you know, their first mission was basically taking this money and transferring it to an account that Jovenel controls. So, yes, report, there are reports of other mercenary groups being in the south in Okai and other areas. A lot of demonstrators were apparently shot in the head in some of these demonstrations. I mean, this is something we've seen in Venezuela and other countries as well, where demonstrators who are, shall we say, against U.S. interests end up dying in this way. So, of course, people have gone to this suspicion in large numbers. But this group basically arrived at the tail end of that mobilization, so they weren't involved in that sniping, if that's indeed what it was.
Well, it's really interesting to see this tie-in with Venezuela at this juncture as well. And you mentioned American interests. Well, Uber Hawk American Senator Marco Rubio was in Haiti just recently. What's he doing down there?
Well, he's, as you know, the sort of shadow Secretary of State for the offensive against Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And being from Florida, I guess he thinks maybe some Haitians hold him in some kind of esteem. Of course, they loathe him. He was there trying to back the government, Jovenel's government, appeals for dialogue, because this is how they're trying to get out of it, saying, oh, let's talk, it's all a misunderstanding. But it didn't do anything, really. It just exacerbated the situation, if anything. So essentially, since the Jovenel government has given on January 10th, as I said, this support to the Washington campaign against Maduro, they've been sending a constant stream of officials down. There was Guy David Hale, who's the Undersecretary of State for Western Hemisphere. You had Rubio. You've had a number of Haitian officials go to Washington as well. So the support of the Trump administration has gone into overdrive to suddenly help Jovenel. In the previous months, that is in the last half of 2018, the U.S. wasn't contributing to Jovenel's problem, but they were sort of sitting back saying, you know, you haven't been much help to us. But, you know, ever since Jovenel towed the line, as it were, in January, they've been giving him what support they can. But to me, it's kind of, in the end, up being gasoline on a fire, because the Haitian people see that, and they're fundamentally anti-imperialist, and they're getting madder because of it.
Well, in the last minute or so that we've got, Kim, what's the future then for the current president? The elections are due soon, and the people are in the street ready to run him out of the country on a rail. Does he have a future there?
Well, it's a five-year term in Haiti, and he's on his third year. That is, he came in 2017,
yeah.
So, you know, he started his third year now. But is he going to make all five? I'm very doubtful. I think these violent demonstrations are going to, and when I say violent, I'm talking about repressive violence primarily, with the police and snipers and what all, making the demonstrators targets. I think these are going to continue, and tomorrow we'll see what happens. I think it's, the U.S. doesn't have friends, it has interests, and I think they can see that Jovenel is wounded, he's bleeding, he's not very effective. I'm sure there is some working group at the State Department and in the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince, sitting down, trying to find a replacement. Who are we going to plug in when Jovenel flees the country? So this is the big struggle right now, especially in the Haitian progressive left forces, to really find some kind of alternative, some organization, some coherent opposition force to really try to counter this move that the empire will be doing shortly.
Well, and finally, Kim, you said you're going to follow up with another piece. Is that in association with The Intercept as well?
Yes, yeah. We're both Haiti Liberté and The Intercept. We're very happy with our collaboration. Matthew Cole, my co-author on this, fantastic national security reporter. We're both working on it with actually an even broader swath of collaborators. So hopefully we'll get more information on this dossier out soon.
Well, we'll all be on tenterhooks, and I'm still waiting for the movie, too. I think it'll be a blockbuster. Thanks a lot, Kim, for coming on the show and telling us about it today, eh?